Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to today's program. I'm Tracy McClure. Pope Benedict arrived in Portugal Tuesday bearing a message of hope to the people of one of Europe's most Catholic but poorest nations. The four-day visit is the Pope's 15th apostolic journey abroad. And tens of thousands of people were expected to turn out for the open-air papal mass in Lisbon's Terreiro dos Paco, Riverside Square, on Tuesday evening. Well, Veronica Scarisbrick is in Portugal with the Pope. She tells us how the Holy Father was welcomed upon his arrival in Lisbon.
Atlantic skies and the sun shining as a 32-strong children's choir from the prestigious Lisbon Academy of Santa Cecilia sang the hallmark hymn, marking this journey to welcome Benedict XVI on Portuguese soil for the first time as Roman pontiff. Bem-vindo, Santo Padre, bem-vindo in Portugal, the children sang, while all the while the President of the Republic, Aníbal Cavaco da Silva, and his wife stood by standing together with the Patriarch of Lisbon, Cardinal José da Cruz Policarpo, in the presence of both state and church authorities. And there were speeches, beginning with the welcoming party.
Santo Padre, é com profundo júbilo que meu nome...
The President, who welcomed the Pope at the start of this journey, rife with meaning, he said, for Portugal, describing him as a messenger of hope at a time of uncertainty. You cannot understand Portugal, he stressed, without that privileged relationship with the Holy See, recalling how in the year 1079 the Pope of the time, Alexander III, recognized the new state of Portugal.
Agradeço, Senhor Presidente, as suas cordiais expressões de boas-vindas, dando voz aos sentimentos e esperanças do bom povo português.
And the Roman pontiff replied, greeting all the Portuguese people, whatever their faith or religion, at an historic time for this beloved and ancient nation, which this year is celebrating the centenary of the proclamation of the Republic.
Venho como peregrino de Nossa Senhora de Fátima.
I come, he remarked, as a pilgrim to Our Lady of Fátima, referring to the apparitions which took place in the Marian Shrine almost a century ago, describing this moment as a window of hope that God opens when a man closes the door to him. Let's recall for a moment how this apostolic visit has two levels of interest. First of all, of Marian devotion, in continuity with the successors of Peter, Paul VI first, and then John Paul II, who all travelled to Fatima on the date of the apparitions, on the 13th of May, the date when Our Lady appeared to three little shepherd children for the first time. Curiously, in Fatima, they're referring to this continuity with the papacy, dubbing him O Terceiro Papa, the third pope. The third pope, then, who in turn, in his speech, referred to the words of a well-known cardinal from the Salazar era, who once remarked, it was not the church that imposed Fatima, but it was Fatima that imposed itself on the church. But it was the second level of interest, the more official one, the Holy Father then highlighted, picking up on the president's, on that special historical connection between Portugal and the successor of Peter, noting how the people of this nation have since the earliest days of their nationhood looked to the successor of Peter for recognition of their existence as a people.
A visita que agora inicio sob o signo da esperança.
Insisting moments later that this visit is under the sign of hope, intended as a proposal of wisdom and mission, a reference to the theme the bishops of Portugal suggested for this visit. And going on to explain how from a wise vision of life and of the world, the just ordering follows. Benedict XVI then placed the Church in a historical context once again, pointing out its openness to cooperating with anyone who does not marginalize or reduce to the private sphere the essential consideration of the human meaning of life. The point at issue, he insisted, is not an ethical confrontation between a secular and a religious system, so much as a question about the meaning that we give to freedom.
Mas de uma questão de sentido a qual se entrega a própria liberdade.
The Pope then went back to the landmark date of the Proclamation of the Republic, highlighting how by separating church and state, The Republican Revolution, which took place 100 years ago in Portugal, opened a new area of freedom for the Church, to which two concordats of 1940 and 2004 would give shape in cultural settings and ecclesial perspectives, profoundly marked by rapid change. The first morning appointment for the Holy Father in Lisbon was a perfect venue to begin a visit to a nation of seafarers. Down by the great river Tejo he went, to a place steeped in symbolism, relating to explorers and evangelizers. It's the Mosteiro do Jeronimus, the Monastery of St. Jerome, a masterpiece of flamboyant Gothic Manuelin architecture, dating back to the 16th century, built to give thanks to Our Lady for the safe return of the man who discovered the passage to India, Vasco da Gama. By King Manuel I, who had a Marian devotion, famously paid for by a tax on spices, a reminder of the great maritime discoveries that laid the foundation of the modern world. Once located right on the waterfront, it was here the navigators and seamen of ships large and small once sailed in from the world over to seek hospitality and spiritual comfort. Today still a place of hospitality, a special one, given it's now the venue for all state ceremonial, such as the Pope's, who was received for the second time by the President and his wife, this time with pomp and circumstance, under a makeshift awning. First the playing of the national anthems, and the Pope smiled gently. Then the firing of cannons from a ship in the River Tejo. And finally a military parade. This monastery is also still today a place to seek spiritual comfort, for within there is the ancient church by the name of Santa Maria de Blaim, or Saint Mary of Bethlehem, built before the monastery. And in the Pope went, past the main entrance with its complex shrine-like hierarchy of stone figures dominated by Henry the Navigator, past the tomb of Vasco da Gama, and into this ancient church, while all the while the choir sang a hymn in his honour, where, like Vasco da Gama, the Holy Father prayed, not through the night perhaps, nor before setting sail for India, but at the start of his first apostolic visit to Portugal to express his Marian devotion in the footsteps of his predecessors to the See of Peter. Alone he prayed then in this silent church dedicated to Mary, where tension of spatial design contrasts with detail and where great palm-shaped columns seem to grow into the ribbed vault. And when his prayer ended, he stepped out and admired the honey-coloured cloister of the monastery, with its quiet myriad of contrasting decorations relating to the perils of the high sea, sea monsters, and more prosaically, coils of rope. And there the Pope's thoughts may have just wandered to the achievements and preoccupations of the Portuguese age of discovery. This monastery, in fact, is a complex symbol of Portuguese history, a powerhouse of European exploration, which led to the building of the modern world, and more recently provided the venue for the signing of an European treaty. It was here, in fact, that the Treaty of Lisbon was signed back in 2007, and, as Benedict XVI knows, an occasion in which Portugal did not shy away from its Christian convictions. A favourite theme, this, of Europe for the Pope, he often highlights how this continent, if built exclusively on financial interests, is bound to fail. An issue he may have touched on in his private talks with the President when moments later, as protocol dictates, he called on him in his pink waterfront once royal residence with its terraced gardens, covering the short distance escorted by horses from the famous Portuguese School of Equestrian Art as the crowds cheered. An ideal place to look out on the very place where the caravels of the Portuguese sailors and missionaries were once moored before setting out to sea, bringing with them the faith of this nation the world over, a legacy still alive today in a world where some 200 million people speak Portuguese. With the Pope in Portugal, I'm Veronica Scaresbrick.
Ahead of the trip, Veronica spoke with Portugal's ambassador to the Holy See, João Alberto Bacelar da Rocha Paris, who explains the four-day visit's dual aims.
I think that this visit is twofold. It has one part which has to do with, let us say, politics, and another one which has to do with religion. As far as the first part is concerned, I can give my opinion, of course. And I think that we are here in front of an answer of the Holy Father to an invitation which was addressed to him in 2008 from the President of the Portuguese Republic when he visited Pope Benedict XVI officially. This is the question which I'd like to begin by stressing. So it's an answer to an invitation addressed by a head of state. And as you know, it was Pope Alexander III in 1179 who, through the papal edict Manifestis Probatum, has recognized the autonomy of Portugal as far as the then Kingdom of Leon was concerned. And from then on until today, there are very, very strong bilateral relations between the Holy See and Rome and Portugal, Lisbon. This being said, I think that the visit of the Holy Father to Portugal cannot but assume a very important significance to my country and the Portuguese people. We should not forget that the Holy Father is a very highly respected personality all over the world, not only in the religious field. So in my opinion, the visit will be a great moment for Portugal and a moment of a very high impact, political and not only.
Because of visibility?
Because of we had the last visit of the Pope with the Holy Father John Paul II a long time ago.
I don't 10 know. Years ago.
Well, 10 years ago is a lot of time, as you may imagine. And even if it's not a lot of time in historical perspective, in day-to-day life perspective, it's a long time. And a lot of changes happened. Anyway, if I can look around me to the visits that this Pope has made already since he began his term, I think that all those visits had an enormous impact. And I don't see any reason to envisage the next visit to Portugal differently.
For the Portuguese people, is this more a visit to Fatima?
No, I don't think so. I think that it's a visit to Portugal. As you probably know, the program of the visit envisages a stay in Lisbon, another in Fatima, and another one in Oporto. And this means that in geographical terms, the Pope begins by, let us say so, more southern part of the rectangle, which is Portugal, goes then to the center of it and finishes in the north of it. This is, in my opinion, as I said, a visit more to Portugal than to one of these three points of Portugal.
When you presented your letters of credence as ambassador of Portugal to the Holy See in 2004, Pope John Paul II thanked the Portuguese nation for standing up for their Christian conviction when it came to co-drafting the European Constitution. 6 years on from that date, would you say Portugal still has a role to play in asserting Christian identity, both within Europe and more broadly in international context?
Well, I think that in that period of almost 6 years since I presented my letters to Holy Father John Paul II, nothing of substantial has changed in the core of the Portuguese cultural heritage. As you know, cultural heritages and cultural identities of countries and peoples are not the result of a short period. They are the result of a long period of decantation and evolution. This means that cultural identities have never been forged from one day to the other. And as far as Portugal is concerned, that cultural heritage is 900 years of age, or has 900 years of age. I think that in this context, nothing has changed substantially. And so the contribution that my country can give in asserting to the European Union and to the world that a Christian identity is a cornerstone of our civilization, of our, I mean, Western civilization, has not changed at all in the last 5 years. Everything that may have changed are very, very minor or superficial points, not substantial ones.
The signing of a new concordat between the Holy See and Portugal back in 2004 confirmed the historical relations between the Catholic Church and Portugal, highlighting the mutual responsibility in building a society that promotes the dignity of the human person, justice and peace. How easy is this in Portugal's increasingly secular society like everywhere else in Europe?
Yes, I really do not think that the defense of human dignity, justice and freedom be incompatible with today's increasingly wide trend towards secular societies. I think that in this respect, I'd like to recall a quite important speech delivered some years ago by President Nicolas Sarkozy here in Rome in the Basilica of St. John in Lateran, in which he spoke about the principle of positive late, later elaborated in several occasions by Pope Benedict XVI, which is not more than the admission of the fact that the roles of the Church and of the state may be complementary and may complement each other in our societies to the benefit of humankind. As a matter of fact, I think that we are here confronted to nothing more than recalling the very old say that according to which to Caesar what belongs to Caesar and to God what belongs to God. So I think that there is a perfect compatibility between the two sectors of our life today.
And a warm thanks there to Portugal's ambassador to the Holy See, João Alberto Bachelar da Rocha Paris. In Fatima on May 13th, Pope Benedict will be celebrating a special Mass in honor of the 10th anniversary of the beatification of Francisco and Jacinta, two of the three children to whom Our Lady appeared almost a century ago. Sister Lucia, or Sister Lucy dos Santos, the last surviving visionary, lived in her convent in Coimbra, Portugal, until her death in 2005 at the ripe age of 98. Pope John Paul II had a special friendship with her that spanned decades until his own death in 2005, less than 2 months after the death of Sister Lucy. We remember who she was and why Fatima was so special to Pope John Paul. She was a quiet, introspective child whose encounter with a radiant lady in white changed her life forever. Lucia and her two cousins, Francisco and Jacinta, saw Our Lady a total of six times in their village of Fatima. It was 1917, the height of the First World War, and a period of religious persecution in Portugal. The shepherd children told of three prophecies that Our Lady had revealed to them. The first, a vision of hell, where those who fail to repent their sins will fall. The second predicted the outbreak of World War II. The third prophecy, not revealed until the year 2000, predicted an attempt on the life of a pope, a bishop dressed in white. That pope was Pope John Paul II, who survived an assassin's bullet in St. Peter's Square on May 13, 1981. He attributed his recovery to the Virgin Mary, whose feast was celebrated that very day. The bullet is today lodged in the crown of the Virgin statue in Fatima. Pope John Paul met Suor Lucia three times, the last of which was in May 2000 for celebrations in Fatima marking the beatification of Francisco and Jacinta. It was the last time Sister Lucia appeared in public. In a radio appeal, she called on Portugal to remain faithful to God and to thank God for the graces he has given the world through the Madonna.
As graças que Deus, por meio de Nossa Senhora, tem concedido a Portugal e ao mundo.
Though the prophecies she and the other children bore were troubling, how did Sister Lucia perceive them? The National Director of the Pontifical Mission in Austria, Father Leo Masberg, met Sister Lucy several times and gives us some insight.
I'm sure that she was a person of deep suffering. All the big saints are people of deep suffering. But she didn't suffer in the way which we might normally imagine. I believe that she suffered because the message of love which God gave through her and through Our Lady was not accepted. So in this sense, she is a bearer of a sad message. But the sadness is that we did not accept the message. It's not that the message is sad. The message is a message of hope, because God entrusted her with a wonderful promise. He said that you will remain in this world for quite some time, quite many years actually. And Jesus wants this because he wants to use you so that people may recognize me, Our Lady, and love me. And he, Jesus, wants to introduce the devotion to my Immaculate Heart. And those who accept this devotion, I promise salvation, and many souls will love God, and they are like the flowers which are put in front of me to ornament his throne. So what she really does, or what Our Lady does in that message, she describes a type of soul. And if you look at the people who accept that message, it's very interesting. They are like a big family. The family of those who have the tenderness of heart. And this tenderness of heart, Lucia herself had in a very, very high degree. You immediately felt at home with her. So she was a bearer of this message, and she was obviously living that message herself very, very strongly.
Well, Monsignor Luciano Guerra, the former rector of the Shrine of Our Lady of Fatima, told Veronica that as the Portuguese have become more secularized, fewer are going to church.
In other words, people come to Fatima, which is a popular thing here it's a popular pilgrimage,
yes,
here in Portugal, but they might not go necessarily to Mass on Sunday.
Many of them don't go to Mass, yes. And this is sometimes for some of them is a sort of refuge. They come here sometimes in the year, but they don't go to Mass in their parishes, no. But many, many go to the Mass. So we have here all good Catholics come to Fatima. Fatima, I think, it's a pleasant spiritual place even for the most cultured people in the church.
What are your expectations for Pope Benedict's visit here?
It takes a very, very great importance, this visit. I think that the question of pedophilia was almost, not exact, a felix culpa. Because people began, even the media, began to write about the scandals of the people, then of priests, then of bishops, archbishops, and even they wanted to touch the Pope. But they had no... But they began already to be too much talking about this pedophile question. And they felt also the obligation to speak about the good things of the church, the other things of the church. And now all people in Portugal are in fact they are desiring very much this visit because they are convinced this will be a very important visit, much more interested. People are much more interested than with the other visits of the Pope. Yes. And if you see the community media, much more interested.
That was going to be my next question. How are the media approaching this visit?
Oh, very well. Very well. Media are putting in evidence these negative questions of pedophilia. They have no other questions against the Church. They have no other questions about the Church. But they are speaking about the virtues of this Pope, the seriousness in the life of the Church. So I am convinced that this will be a very, very good moment, almost apologetic for the Church. Almost apologetic for the Church. And for the Christians here, I think I'm convinced the Pope will in fact confirm the Church in its face here in Portugal.
Monsignor Luciano Guerra, the former rector of the Shrine of Our Lady of Fatima. On his flight over to Lisbon from Rome Tuesday morning, Pope Benedict answered questions from journalists aboard the papal plane. The Pope expressed joy at the prospect of his visit and gratitude to Portugal for all the nation has done and is doing for the world. Portugal, he said, has been a great force for the Catholic faith, and it has carried that faith to every part of the world. A courageous, intelligent, creative faith. It has known how to create great cultures. But Sean Patrick Lovett has more on that press conference.
Non solo da fuori vengono attacchi al Papa alla Chiesa, ma le sofferenze della Chiesa vengono proprio dall'interno della Chiesa.
Attacks against the Pope or the Church do not only come from outside. Rather, the sufferings of the Church come from within, from the sins that exist in the Church. This has always been known, but today we see it in a really terrifying way.
Realmente terrificante.
This was Pope Benedict's answer to the third and final question put to him by press accompanying him on the plane to Portugal. Previous questions had dealt with the dialectic of faith and reason, secularism, and the current economic crisis gripping Europe. However, the third and final question went to the heart of the crisis and scandal of sexual abuse of minors by some religious and clergy, and whether the Fatima vision of a suffering Church could be extended to Catholicism today. Pope Benedict responded that the greatest persecution of the Church doesn't come from enemies on the outside, but is born from the sin within the Church. He added, the Church has a deep need to relearn penance, to accept purification, to learn forgiveness on one hand, but also the need for justice.
Il perdono non si studisce la giustizia.
Forgiveness, concluded the Holy Father, is not a substitute for justice. I'm Sean Patrick Lovett.
And I'm Tracy McClure. Thanks for joining me today. Join us again tomorrow at the same time and on this very same station for more coverage of Pope Benedict's apostolic voyage to Portugal. Bye-bye. Laudator Jesus Christus.